on my book tour, but I want to give an opportunity, as we all discussed when Jack made this offer, for you guys to do some Q&A with me. So, obviously, if anybody's interested in asking some questions, I'd love to hear from you. I haven't used GoToWebinar as the host before, so I'm looking at it and trying to figure out what the best way to do this would be for you guys. But if anybody has a question, there is a questions queue here that I see, and maybe you could. I see that Greg Yowes and Mike Kitchen and Matt Cunningham and Jeff Gleason have all typed in already. If you have a question, just maybe make something of a note here, and I can call on you, or I can go in order and say hello. Aaron Underwood, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Aaron. Just want to welcome you.
Thanks, Gary.
No problem, man. Ryan Black.
Hey, how's it going, Gary?
Hey, bud. How about Bob Reichart? Chris Monahan.
Chris Monahan is here.
Very nice, Chris. How you doing?
I'm good. You?
Good, man. Clayton Jacobs.
Hello.
Hey, Clayton. Great. Kurt Henry. Oh, he's on mute. Let me see if I can. I don't know. Weird. Okay. Daniel Westman.
Hey, folks, again, if you look under your little controller, there's a little green microphone thing where you can mute yourself and kill that background noise when you're not talking. That would help us a lot.
Evan Webb.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, how are you? Greg Yao.
Hey, Gary, I'm here.
Hey, man, how are you? This is great. Okay, I think we get the gist. So, you know, I see there's a lot of background noise. I'm not sure if the best way to do this is maybe to re-mute everybody and then have you guys ping me in the questions queue, and then I can unmute you and you can ask the question. We can roll that way. Well, we can try to roll this way. But basically, as Jack and I, you know, talked about with the offer, is that I wanted to give an opportunity to sit here for half an hour to an hour and just answer as many questions on anything specific to Thank You Economy or business or to social media as possible. So I want to make that opportunity to you guys. So if anybody has a question, I can see who's talking. So if somebody wants to start talking, if multiple people talk, I can pick the person I see the name talking first and clear the queue that way. So if anybody has a question, why don't you fire away?
Well, I'll go first if no one else is going to.
All right.
My big question was, and Jack brought it up partially on the survival podcast one. For myself, I'm an artist, and I hear you talk about, you know, the business DNA a lot.
Yes.
And your answer on that show was the best thing to do is actually, you know, get it in partnership with someone that has it. But
yes.
In the meantime, I've always been interested in hearing those kind of business stories from you about, you know, people walking into wine library and, you know, walking out with cases of wine, or even the fact that, you know, you got me to buy 5 copies of your book to join in this thing, which I thought was brilliant. What I do is comic books.
Okay.
Well, that's my side job, you know, my passion. My day job is doing animation for feature films.
I see. Okay.
So the big thing I'm trying to figure out is dealing with it's kind of like a resource depletion of time and money doing stuff on the side and trying to get the best bang for the buck as far as the business side of things.
So let's talk about it this way, Mike. What is the end goal? What would you like, you know, for me and everybody listening, all these answers will be not only for the specific person, but will also probably ring true to some of you. But the first thing I'd want to know is what's your end goal, right? Like, what would be the ideal situation that could happen, Mike?
The end goal would be creative freedom to do my own projects, like my own stories, my own comic books, self-published, and earning enough income on that to support my family, which is a big family. I have 4 kids with another on the way next month.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, I mean, one human being who's already doing a full-time job, has 4 kids and 1 on the way, and is a creative, to also be able to, you know, build out the business model, there's some really interesting challenges to that. So from my standpoint, are you finding enough time to actually create the product while you're living your real job?
It's a very slow process. Like, I've talked to other comic book creators, and one guy that's been doing this for years said it best, is that, you know, making comics is a great white shark of devouring time. And so is my day job in animation, and so is raising a large family. So I am getting it done, but because comics are a habitual entertainment medium, much like, I guess, like the what you do with Wine Library, what Jack does with the Survival Podcast, where you have to get the next episode out frequently in order to build momentum. Exactly. So right now it's taking a long time to actually get that momentum.
So let me ask you a question. One of the things that I believe in very heavily is practicality. You know, it has to be practical. Is there any thought that you could create a series that would be a 5 to 7 quote-unquote page comic instead of like the comic book I grew up with, which is like 50 pages or 40 or 25 or whatever they are?
Yeah, the closest solution I can come up with for that is by doing, you know, like these web comics where you can re-release a page a day or a page a week.
I see. How are those things doing?
It's real hit and miss. It seems like the ones with the most success piggyback other successful mediums, like, you know, there's video game tie-ins and things like that.
Sure. So, you know, I mean, one of the more interesting things about this is that, you know, here's how something like what you're doing is going to work. You're going to execute something, and then you have to build up people's context to the characters in your comic books. And the only way you're going to do that is by you personally being involved in, you know, comic book conversations and forums and searching Twitter for people talking about the similar genre. And you're talking about it in a massive amount of time, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, I really think that people need to be very practical about their business. I mean, I think that you can always put out stuff that may just hit. And it could happen, but that's playing lottery, right?
Right.
I think the reality is that, you know, building a team around you is very fascinating to me, but very difficult because you're so stretched in to execute the actual end product.
Right.
I mean, I struggled with this with Wine Library TV for a long time. You know, like every day I think like, wow, even now with Daily Grape, I'm like, wow, I really have, you know, I'm only one person. How it's so difficult to scale. On the flip side, what you're doing is a labor of love, right?
Right.
So, you know, I wonder if, you know, to me, I wonder if the most interesting thing that can be done, I would tell you a couple things. Number one, I think YouTube is very interesting to think about. YouTube is the most likely place where you can hit a home run out of nowhere. So one of the things I would think about a lot is how do you create little videos around whoever, and I assume you're creating flat out new characters, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I think it's context of characters. I think that you use what you're good at to begin with animation, things of that nature. I would highly recommend trying to maybe create context around the character. If I really, really was giving you an answer, and I feel like this is a fun format because I feel like I'm talking to, like, a good friend and I'm just giving a piece of advice, more so than, like, in an interview where there's not – it's like a blank statement. I would tell you to create 15 to 20-second animation storytelling platforms around the main character and see if you can create context on YouTube, because that's the most likely place you can get strike gold in a scenario where you don't have unlimited time.
Right.
I mean, is that something you could conceivably do?
Yeah, it is. Again, it's another, like, animation is also very time consuming. So it's a matter of me trying to do, like, a, you know, a surgical strike on this stuff. It's like sending.
Let me tell you something, and then I'll move on because I don't want to hoard it. And then, you know, maybe we'll come back if nobody else is speaking. The production quality of Wine Library TV was its biggest secret of success. I didn't dwell on it, even though everybody killed me for it. And I know it's hard for you because you're an artist and it's your craft, but give that some thought. I don't know if you do sketch or anything else that can conceivably speed up the process, but you know exactly what you're talking about when you say why Wine Library TV and why the Survival Podcast works. And if you're unable to execute that, you're dead before you start.
Right.
You know, that's just practical. I mean, that's just real. You know, that's just real. And so I wonder if there's a way for you, and maybe you record the process of creating the comic book. Maybe that's your daily output of something, and it's not pretty. It's a sped-up version of you creating.
That was actually a suggestion I got from another creator just recently, which I thought was great, because it almost turns it into a classroom so that other people can get something from it.
So that's kind of where I was going next. Here's that's great advice from that person, and here's what I think you're getting from me, is that it has to be practical, and you have to execute, or nothing matters. For the 26 of you that are on right now, listen, you could talk theory. I could write thank you economy all day long. We can blabber about ideas. If it's not executable and practical, it will not work. And so that's what I'm kind of digging for here, which is why I'm glad to hear somebody else came up with that idea, because that I think is the most practical, you know. If you're going to be at least creating every day, if you speed it up, because obviously you might not get a lot done, and you know, might be boring to watch somebody execute for an hour and a half, and you make something consumable out of it, that could be an interesting way to go.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, man. Great. Thanks, Mike. Who else has a question?
I got one, Gary, if no one else wants
to jump up.
We'll go with Brian first, and then we'll go with Chris next. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Gary. I'm actually good buddies with Jack. I run a website called ITS Tactical, and I consider myself one of the lucky ones that actually gets to live my passion every day. I run a blog, basically a resource for law enforcement, military, and outdoor enthusiasts. Use kind of do-it-yourself information, skill set info, and also gear reviews. What I'm having a hard time with is that now, as I'm experiencing growth, and I've actually gotten to hire an employee, which is pretty cool to me, actually moved out into a retail location and all that good stuff. But what I'm finding is as I've grown, it's hard for me to keep up with that productivity level that I used to have when I was running the blog out of my house and, you know, it was just me working. So now that I'm finding that I have all these other things that are hitting at the same time with an employee, other things to do. I mean, what's your advice on how to handle that growth and keep up with that productivity level?
So you feel like the management is bogging you down?
I do, yeah. Uh-huh. That's probably a large part of it.
Let's get to the real crux of it. Do you not like the management part?
It's something I have to deal with. Of course, that's not my passion. You know, my passion is creating content, and that's what I love to do. But at the same time, I understand it's part of the package. So
yeah. So like listening to you, I can see the tone wasn't there, and that's something you should really be real with yourself, right? It's super important to be honest with yourself. You know, to build a business, management is the game. You know, yep. I ironically go the other way. I love managing, right? I love building infrastructure, people, and how to execute on a goal and all of that nature. So I would tell you to be very, very careful and not. And really be real with yourself. Do it for a little longer. You know, sometimes it takes time. Sometimes you... But recognize that managing, it can be done in many different ways. I mean, don't overmanage from this standpoint. You might have hired the wrong employee. This is something a lot of people make a mistake with. The management really is a bogged down situation. It may be the employee is not that good, and you're not... And if you've never managed before, you might think it's you... when it's the employee. So give a lot of thought to, you know, if the employee's not working out, to try another one before you decide. But if you get to a place in 6 months to a year where you realize management is not something you love, that's okay. It's not the end of the world. There's a lot of ways to execute and build businesses other ways, but you should really figure that part out.
Hey, Gary,
it's
real
funny
quick.
You say that cause,
Gary, real
it's
quick.
Funny you say that because Jack and I just recently talked about that very same fact, too, so.
I just wanted to reinforce that, Gary. Could you give me an answer to this question for Brian? The minute you determine the guy's the wrong guy, how quick do you terminate him when you're a one-man operation with one employee?
Yesterday.
Thank you.
All right, Jack, I got you.
Yeah, no, listen, I hate firing people so much so that I stopped doing it at Wine Library because I'm too soft. I don't want to fire people. On the flip side, I just created infrastructure and created henchmen who fired for me because the fact of the matter is keeping a bad situation around is very cancerous, whether it's a two-person operation like you have or when it was a 100-person operation for me at Wine Library. There's just no value in it.
Thanks, Gary. I definitely appreciate that advice.
Yeah, and you know, listen, you may look back and be like, holy shit, I fired a guy for no reason. I am a sucky manager because you go through three or four people and it doesn't work out. But you've got to realize that to scale, you've got to manage. But if you don't love to manage, then there's nothing wrong in being a one-man operator, what have you. You've just got to realize the limitations that are going to come along with it.
Sure. Cool. Well, what would you suggest really quick on that growth and productivity? I mean, if it is going to grow to a level where I do have more employees and maybe, you know, I get to a situation where I have better employees, what would you, how did you do it when you grew your business? How did you stay productive? And
I never did the same thing anymore. I just kept growing. I mean, I still love, nothing made me happier in the world in 1998 than to stand on the floor at Wine Library and sell wine. Nothing in the world.
Yeah.
And now I manage 800 businesses, right? So it's kind of like, you know, I just realized that I had to keep growing. And every day I realized, you know, what would happen is I maxed out. I realized, okay, I'm done just being the only person on the floor to sell. Let me hire somebody. Then I basically said, oh my God, it's time for me to get off the floor and start doing this .com thing. I just graduated, but I realized if I stayed executing, that's what I'd be doing. And if I wasn't managing or structuring or marketing or planning or strategizing, then nothing would get done. And so it just depends on what your ambition is. I mean, listen, I'm sitting in a hotel room in Denver right now, and I can tell you right now, I was like laying in my, you know, my bed working, and I was like, oh, I don't want to do this seminar. Oh, I don't want to go to the book signing tonight. Like, you do hit roadblocks, you know, like you do hit, you know, points where it's hard or what have you, but you've just got to ask yourself what you want to accomplish. And listen, I, for example, want to do less talking and being less of a pundit, and I'm going to. I'm going to stop writing books and doing less videos and start executing on VaynerMedia and some other stuff that I want. You're fully in control of what you want to do.
Got you. Thanks for the help, Gary.
Sure, man.
I'll jump in. You said you would go to boards all over and message boards and tweets and stuff like that. How did you kind of track where you were leaving comments, and if you're hitting that many sites, I can see just getting everything get jumbled and mashed together. What did you use to track conversations you were having on different, on these various different places?
You know, good question, Chris. Chris, you know what's interesting about what I did with Wine Library TV? I lived it. It was my life. So I wasn't doing it as a tactic. So I knew the 27 wine boards that I was a part of. And all they were basically favorites of mine on the webpage. And, you know, it was weird. I didn't really need anything to track it. I lived it. I would just literally go there every day, you know. It wasn't super crazy. Like, I think if you're managing something you're not aware of, where it's a little out of your comfort zone or it's not what you live and breathe, you have to kind of remember. But for me to remember Wine Spectator, Mark Squires, East Coast Wine Board, West Coast Wine Board, Wine Berserkers, I mean, these were the sites I went to every day. I lived it. So it wasn't anything that I had to manage. All I had to do was stay disciplined and actually do it. And then I used Google Alerts for Wine Blog, and basically anything that popped up, I read the full article and left a comment. The big thing I did, Chris, was that I didn't spam. I became part of the community. I didn't go in there and ever leave a link to Wine Library TV. It was in my bio, in my profile, but I never, ever said, come watch me here or buy wine here. And I think that's where people make the mistake. It wasn't hard for me to manage. It was what I was living and breathing.
Yeah, more or less subtle.
Yeah. So, yeah, no problem, man. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Gary, this is Joel. Can you?
I have a question, Gary. Can you hear me?
Sure, I'm
going to
go with Jewel, and then we're
going to
go with Matthew.
Go ahead, Jewel. Okay, hey, yeah, I'm in a business that's primarily, it's kind of a mix. It's dog training, and I do high-end dog training for protection, for military and law enforcement, things like that, but that's very specialized. And then I also make equipment. And so my one of my issues is, unfortunately, right now I'm in the military. So I'm trying to plan a transition out of the military and into this business, but it's a matter of every time I deploy, which currently I'm in Bogota, Colombia, actually, but every time I deploy, everything comes to a screeching halt.
Sure.
And so I was interested in any kind of advice that you may have as to how to, you know, get something going in a time period of about a year and a half to 2 years. That would allow me, and I've got some kind of infrastructure. It's small, it's family size, but I've got some infrastructure that I drop back into each time. But I'm trying to get it to where within one of these, you know, kind of gaps between deployments, I can make it functional enough that I can step out and still support my family.
I would tell you this, Joel. Have you thought about using these downtimes, quote unquote? And it's so weird. Putting into my context, I literally just sat here and looked at my calendar and was thinking about canceling stuff and going on like a 5-day vacation with my wife, mainly just to think and strategize. And so have you thought about using this downtime as actually more learning and research and development slash building your personal brand in those genres. Because what you can do is become part of the communities that are going to buy from you, back to what I kind of did, back to Chris's question, of going into all these forums, Twitter, Facebook pages. Have you thought about really using this quote-unquote downtime to build you up your reputation and go in and become part of the communities that talk about whatever you're building in equipment and dog training?
Yeah, that's a good idea. One of the problems that I do run into is our philosophy of dog training is highly different than the norm. Right now, the dog training world, unfortunately, is ruled and dominated by a sporting mentality, and then they try to apply that to law enforcement and military. It seems to be somewhat successful in law enforcement as long as the stress level doesn't get too high, but in the military, it's largely useless, at least with special forces, tier one units, jumping out of airplanes and deploying out of submarines and things of that nature. So, the problem is that when I get on these boards and start writing, everybody says it's impossible.
Got it.
You can't do that. There's no way. And so it's like immediately met with resistance.
Yeah.
Right. And it's hard to, you know, set a YouTube video up of deploying with a dog out of a submarine tube. Number one.
Totally get it.
Right.
Let me ask you another question. What about the equipment you're building?
Now that's another area that, that's an area that I feel that I can really capitalize on, because we build prototype equipment all the time and then we test it. And I think I do have an avenue there where I can record and film that. The downside, of course, is that when I'm deployed, obviously that's the primary part that comes to a screeching halt. I have one of my dogs with me right now down here in Bogota, so I can continue some training. I can use my iPhone to do some video for YouTube and things like that, but I only have the equipment that I have.
So I would highly recommend going around and seeing how many places you can become part of the conversation and tread softly and become part of the communities and build up the equity in the community before you kind of bring out the, you know, maybe shocking or outside the box thought processes. I think if you become part of the community, and again, this may not even be, you may have to find different communities that aren't just about dog training. They may just need to be about dogs. That when you come out with this, because I don't know, maybe you're so emotional about the other styles that you wouldn't want to be there talking, you know? But I think context, Joel, is what I think, Joel. I think that's the biggest thing that comes across to me here, is that you got to do what you can actually do and not worry about what you can't. And what you can actually do is become, you know, part of many communities that would then be very receptive to hear what you have to say about your thoughts, you know?
Great. I appreciate that.
I know it's kind of, you know, a lot of times, the answers to these questions are difficult because you're boxed into a certain genre, and I know that, you know, I think that it's important to always rethink. I know you might think that, you know, well, they all disagree with me and it's in a different place, but I'm sure there's common ground that you can agree on, have conversations, create context, and then when you start the process of conversating around what you think, it could create some interesting dynamics.
Outstanding. I appreciate that.
Chris, I'd be glad to have you on ITS to write an article, man. We've got thousands of eyes on our site. If you can hit me up when you get a chance.
No problem. We'll do.
Okay. Hi, Gary. This is Matt coming in.
Hey, Matt.
Hi. I have a general question, I guess, about using social media. I know that you talk about, you know, and do pour your heart and soul into the content that you provide. But do you ever find yourself having to censor yourself, or how do you separate the very personal from the professional? And I know that those lines are blurred when trying to start or trying to build a personal brand, but is there like a code that you follow as far as content and editing it?
Yeah, from my standpoint, the code of ethics is kind of like, you know, what do I feel okay with as a human being, right? I think that question is extremely personal and works very different for every person. You know, for example, my wife, you can Google right now, you can almost never find a picture of her, right?
Right.
You know,
okay.
So for a guy that's very out there, my wife, on the other hand, is not so into that, you know? And so, I share a whole lot because I'm an extreme extrovert and have gone to a very crazy place, to be honest with you, Matt, where I'm just – I don't know, I'm shocked how transparent I am and how not scared of anything I am kind of thing, that the truth will set you free kind of things. But, you know, listen, I'm not going to go tweet out my social security number, right?
Sure, sure.
And I have told people what I've made for a living in a year because people have caught me in the right spot in the right conference and have called me out on being transparent. But it's not something I normally want to say. You know, and I think everybody has their own things. I share a lot more things than most people do, but that doesn't mean I'm right and you're wrong. I think that it's actually a very good situation, which is that whatever makes you comfortable is the right answer. And so don't overthink it. Don't think that you're being too private and that's holding you back. It definitely isn't.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Gary.
Sure, man.
Richard?
Carl, will you first, and then Richard?
Oh, hey there.
Yep, go ahead, Carl.
Hey, this is a general question as well, and has to do with the fact that you seem to be an incredibly busy man. Is how do you cram so much productivity into your day with between responding to people and running multiple projects and stuff, you know, as far as techniques or software or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm very mobile, I think, is huge for me, Carl. You know, I use Twitter and TweetDeck on mobile and Facebook app. They're huge. They allow me to engage quite a bit when I'm in an elevator or a cab. I'll tell you another thing, Carl. I'm obsessed with actually doing it, right? I think the reason I get away with executing a lot more engaging is because I care about it. You know, when I'm in a meeting with Comedy Central about a TV show and then I'm running to a meeting about my book, in those 9 minutes that I have, I'm engaging, and it can add up because it doesn't take that long to do one single engagement in this world. So I think the biggest reason it seems that I'm able to accomplish a whole lot is because I really take it serious. I eat my own dog food. I'm not just saying it for kicks and giggles. I think a lot of people are doing it because they think they have to or it's a tactic. I do it because I love it, and it's why I think I get a lot more done, you know?
You're focused on actionable items?
What's that, Carl?
Focused on things that are actionable all the time.
Yeah, I'm focused on people. I mean, look what we're doing right now. There's 26 people in here. I'm doing this webinar in lieu of doing, you know, a CNN article or PBS.com or what else today that I turned down. And, yes, people bought books to be a part of it, and that helped me. But I could get a lot more exposure. I could sell much more than what the 110 books that this represents. You know, if I did CNN right now, I'd probably sell 500. What I don't think people understand, Carl, is that if I did a CNN interview, I would not touch or create context with anybody. I'm blown away right now that I have a totally different relationship forever with, you know, Matt Cunningham and with you and, you know, and with, you know, Joel. And, you know, I just think
CNN is just a push type of situation where you're interacting with us.
Correct. This is an hour that, you know, shit, in my world, I can make $5,000 in an hour. Will I make $5,000 in this hour? Here's my answer. I think yes, but I don't think it's going to happen today. I think it's going to happen over the next 48 years. Do you know what I mean?
Right. It's about building those lifetime relationships.
I only play lifetime value. That's all that matters to me. What matters to me now is that you guys have seen me on TV or know that I have a million followers on Twitter or can read an article about me or Jack can say I'm a good guy and you can listen to an interview. But here in this hour, I can prove it. And I think that really matters. I don't know. I think people are very confused about what actually has value. For me, you know, building real relationships, whether it's one-on-one or one-on-26 like this is, really has equity. And I think people always want scale, which is why they want to be on CNN, and I want to do things like this.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sure. Who is next?
Richard.
Hey, Richard. How are you, bud?
Hey, Greg is next. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. First of all, I really appreciate everything you're doing coming on here and talking with us. And reading through your book, there was a concept you talked about, micro trends and the first user advantage. And it's something I'm having just a little bit of difficulty kind of getting my head wrapped around exactly what you mean by that. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that and help me out a little?
Micro trends and first user advantage?
Yes, sir.
So it's my belief that because I believed in Twitter in 2007 and went all in, I was able to amass a lot more followers that could not have been replicated if I figured it out right now and did the same exact thing, because there's dramatically more noise It's kind of, and it really is a gold rush scenario. The people that first thought there was a lot of gold in the West Coast got more of it. More people came and got some, but those first people got more. And I'm noticing a trend that I didn't think was possible, but it's becoming very clear to me that the people that are becoming first users, and good users, you got to be good. So if you went to the gold rush in 1800s in California and you had no idea how to pick out gold, well, guess what? You didn't get anything, you know? So you have to be able to execute. But the people that first recognized things like Tumblr or Instagram or Quora or all these emerging platforms, I do think pick up more users, followers, more percentage of voice on the platform, which I think becomes very, very important. And I think more important than ever is understanding technologies as they emerge, becoming part of those communities, and picking up more share of the market that's there. It's been a very big deal for a lot of people with Twitter. It's been a very big deal with people I'm seeing on Tumblr right now. Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, a Q&A site that you guys should all check out. I'm seeing people there win on it. So my thesis is that because technology is moving so fast and emerging technology is so important, that these first-to-market people that are good tend to get a little bit more value than the people that come second.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, applying it to what I do, I run a website called bluesheepdog.com, and I deal directly with law enforcement training, which is my background, training in law enforcement. And traditionally, law enforcement has not necessarily embraced a lot of emerging technologies, or at least not very quickly. And the other problem that we frequently have
is... video cameras.
Right. But the other problem is that a lot of officers that try to engage in the social networks wind up getting themselves in trouble. Either they do something stupid or just their own departments don't want them making any reference to their department or agency or what they do, that type of thing. So I have seen that there's a little bit of a barrier there just for my particular niche. Do you have any ideas on how to engage people with these new emerging technologies with my barriers?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I think there's a lot of people that are dealing with this and have definitely struggled with it. I will tell you this, every spot is different. So every place has a different tone. I think you guys should all check out Quora. I'm playing on it right now as you guys, based on now that I'm seeing a lot of law enforcement, a lot of themes on who's in this room. This is more of an informational place where you guys can answer questions. It's more information and fact-based than just engaging. You know, you've got to understand who you're working for. You've got to understand the DNA of the captain, of the town, of the people that are going to be looking at you. And so, you know, I think it's communication. I think it's, hey, I think it's being proactive. I had a buddy in law enforcement that I told to go this round and work for him. He went to the captain. He's like, listen, I'm going to be involved in all this stuff. And I'm not doing anything wrong. Keep an eye on me. Here are my accounts. And, you know, he has a good sensibility of the captain, and it's gone well for him. And so I think it's about being proactive and actually communicating to the powers that be that this is going to be part of the process. And that may shut it down right away, and I can respect that you don't want to open that can of worms, but I also think it's also proactive and always leads to a better scenario.
Very cool. Thank you.
And I also think it's picking your spots, right? Like Quora to me is like the library. MySpace is like the strip club. Maybe you want to stay out of the strip club, you know?
Understood.
So it's picking the spots as well.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Hey, Gary.
Evan.
Hey. My question has to do with I self-published a children's book on economics, and my long-term goal is to make it a series with different subjects. And I was just wondering, as an author, how I should, you know, get endorsements for the book or build up publicity for the book or get people to advocate the book for me.
Yeah, so I think that the best way to do that is to find every place that people are talking about that age group and that genre of books and become part of the community. I'm a broken record, but it's all that works. Once you become one of them, you win. And so You know, there's tons of Facebook fan pages that are probably talking about things that are similar. There's definitely forums about children's books. And search.twitter is your play. I would search any book that's similar to yours. Start talking to them about that book. Let them look at your bio and be like, hey, wait a minute, you wrote a book similar. And that leads to a lot of opportunity. I'm very bullish on search.twitter.com. It's a cocktail party. You can go in there and start conversating with people about anything that leads them to look at your bio, that leads to all the action. So those are definitely some of the things I believe in.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you tried any of those things?
I just finished the book, and I probably should have been doing these all along while I was, you know, writing it and working on it. but I haven't. I haven't looked at that.
So you should definitely
all do those things. Okay. All I've done is just put up a website to try to sell it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, putting up a website is like going on the top of a mountain saying, hey, you know? So
right.
you definitely want to go and, you know, and be part of the cocktail party. You know, are there books out there right now that are similar in the genre that are easy for you to search people talking about and then getting into conversations?
Honestly, I haven't seen anything that close to it. It's a rhyming book. So it's like it reads like Dr. Seuss, but it teaches economics. So I don't know.
Pretty cool.
I haven't seen anything like it.
Gary, can I throw something in real quick? Yeah, I think one of the things you might want to look at with the communities you need to be entering, if you're doing stuff for kids, even though it's about economics, your community is parents. That's where your community really is. You got to get into parenting communities because a lot of these parents are in communities. They want to teach their kids, you know, right from wrong. They want to know, how do I be a good parent? And teaching your kids about good economic sense from the ground up is a great start for any kid. There's so many people screwed up about money out there. So I think that's maybe not your community, but one of your communities.
Yeah. Jack and Gary, real quick, just a kind of a side thought there is the homeschooling community.
Huge.
Would probably be a huge area to look into for something like that because they're very interested in teaching their children practical things.
Agreed.
And we, you know, we have six children ourselves. My wife homeschools through my deployments, but she, you know, we are imminently interested in practicality. There's not nearly as much theory going on in homeschooling circles.
I totally agree with that.
Wouldn't be a good place to start with that.
Well, I don't want to take up too much time, but visionforum.com is probably the biggest fish in the pond right now, and you can branch out from there. Homeschools are typically Christian as well.
Evan, real quick on that front, don't go in there and start posting on your first post like, hey, I wrote a book that I think you guys all will like. It's important that you go in there and say, hey, you know, I'm learning about homeschooling as a genre because I'm creating something that I think might be useful to that community. What do you guys think is useful for your kids? Or what are some of the kind, you know, like become part of it instead of selling right to it? Because I'm sure Joel will tell you, you go in there and try to sell to them right away, they'll kick you out of there quick.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Gary.
Yes, Greg.
Thanks. Hold on, Dave. Sorry, Gary.
No worries.
My problem is that I have a lot of ideas, and I mean, I'm a songwriter. I'm from the creative side. We already had, I can't remember his name, but was talking about that earlier, did the Tune for Jack's podcast. And I'm just having a hard time nailing down the one idea that I need to crush, dude, because it's all over the place, and every one of them is crushable.
so that's the funny thing. As somebody who executes so much, I have a very similar problem. I really, really have the same problem. I'm sitting on 17 ideas right now that I know will do well. Here's the one thing that I'm probably doing better than you, though. I'm picking one at a time and actually doing it.
Yeah.
And so I would say that, you know, I get it, and you know, there's probably things that I can tell you that I believe in. But I would tell you that pick the one that feels the best right this second, and just do it. Don't let the other ones die. You'll get to them, But don't be scared that you picked the wrong one, because if they're all crushable, good, crush.
Cool.
You know? And I know that's easy, you know, it's easy for me to say, and you haven't done it yet, so it hasn't been as easy to actually execute. But I would just tell you that you're going to be really upset if you don't do it. And time's going to just keep running, and you need to go out and do it.
Well, and what's frustrating is that that it changes, you know. And
yeah, it does.
I think this one's crushable. The next minute, I think this one is going to be the
listen. I just released Daily Grape. I've got a $4 a month subscription for my ratings. It's doing extremely well. I'm like, should have I done the other thing? I mean, you know, that's just part of being a creative. But you know what? You can't be scared of it. You've got to pick one. You know what? Thinking and theory and talking is bullshit. Execution is the only thing that matters. And, you know, I don't care how crushable your ideas are. They all suck until you put them into motion.
Well, that's worth the price of entry, man. Thanks.
Good, man.
Hey, Gary. It's Carl again.
Hey, Carl.
Hey, in regards to the last one, one of the things I've noticed with Jack is that he has gotten involved in a lot of different projects, and then he has let them go on to other folks to kind of raise them. So you can work on all of your projects and give them life, but you don't necessarily have to be the one that continues with them.
There's a million ways to go with it, Carl. Listen, I've got a $60 million a year wine business that I'm not actually running anymore, so I understand it. On the flip side, I think it'd be doing $100 million if I was running it right now, you know? So you've always got to be making decisions, and I agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that can build something and then pass it on, and I think that's great, and I agree. Listen, I've got a lot of businesses going on that are running that I'm not the sole operator, so that's definitely a way to go. But I think for the last guy, it's definitely you first have to execute it for a year or two to give it some life, you know?
Let me concur with that, because I have started things up, and I've got more things I'm starting up and handing off. But I built TSP for damn near 2 years straight, every single day, so much that you guys know I did it out of my car when I started. And while I was in startup phase, I didn't do anything else except my full-time job, which was 80 hours a week plus what I was doing with TSP.
Exactly.
You've got to eat, live, and breathe one thing until you give it life. Once it has life, you can bring other people and you can make it scalable, but you're the one that's got to be, you got to make the Frankenstein get up off the table. Until then, it's just dead, inanimate object laying on the slab.
And let me tell you something, and the second you then hand it off, the second you don't live and breathe it every second is the second it starts diluting some of that energy. So, you know, it is imperative to understand that you can't live and breathe it for 3 months and hand it off and think it's going to last for 30 years. It's kind of like momentum, right? It's like whatever you put in, that momentum is going to carry it through. You can hire amazingly. You might hire somebody who's better than you. I mean, that's conceivable. So God bless. But please understand, don't listen to what Jack said. I mean, I lived and breathed wine library every day for 11 years before I started segueing out. So, you know, it's very important to understand you can't get away with 6 weeks of living and breathing it or 6 months, because you're going to have 6 week or 6 month results.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's hard as a creative, too, I mean, because you're always going at
always.
Angles, you know.
Always. Listen, that's why creatives and artists don't make a lot of money a lot of times. I mean, it's a very simple fact. You've got to have the ability to be the executor as well. Because if you just an ideas guy, that's what you're going to end up with. And ideas are tremendously fun, but execution is what pays the bills.
There's got to be a way to make money with ideas, though.
There is. Once you build enough of a brand that people are willing to pay for yours, but there's so few people that can actually get to that level, you know?
Yeah.
And the funny part is, the only way you get paid for ideas is if you've executed some of your own.
Yeah. Building a portfolio.
Absolutely, Carl, but one that actually has some of your ideas executed. The reason so many people take my social media conversation seriously is because I'm one of the few people that have turned it into actual dollars.
So you've proven proven the talk.
Exactly, Carl. You know, and once you prove the talk, then the people believe you can replicate it, and that just makes sense. We all take much more credit into once you've done it, right?
Yep.
I mean, like, LeBron really needs to win a title. It's about execution. So, guys, listen, I'm sorry we got a little bit of a late start, but I also have to run to my book signing, and it's 6 now. I really, you know, I got to be honest with you. I wish you guys knew me better to know that I wouldn't say this, or it's not something I say often. Something about the intimacy of this and just the way this went. I really, really enjoy this. Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, guys, and all of you, feel free to go to facebook.com/Gary or Twitter and hit me up with questions in the future. I'm around.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, guys.
Thanks,
guys.
Have a great night.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you
so much. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Justin. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
And for those that can still hear me, I will be making a recording available to all the attendees.
Thank you, Jack.
Great, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. Hey, thanks, Jack. I really appreciate it.
All right, I'll see you guys.
Thanks,
all right, good night.
Thanks,
have a good one.
All right, I'll catch you guys tomorrow, and I'll be sending out announcements for the two sessions with just me.
Thanks, brother.
And Gary, thank you so much for this. One of the highlights of my career, man, if you're still there.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for arranging the court, Jack.
All right, guys, I'm out. Have a good evening.
Thank you, bro.